radiation hardly slows them.
Oh, yeah, right.
They rounded the corner, and everyone stopped. There wasn't the least doubt that they'd found the source of the massive rat poisoning. There had been, fairly recently, a huge slippage of earth, and half the hillside had opened up like giant jaws. The tumbled remnants of several concrete buildings clung perilously to the jagged edge of the sheer cliff, 200 feet above them. But the quake had done more than damage the buildings. It had also torn open great burial pits beneath them, spilling their secret load from the metal-walled, sealed caskets. The whole slope, hundreds of feet across, down to the river, was a tangled mass of rusting drums and split plastic vats. Whatever they might once have held was now an unbelievable cocktail of hideous substances, mingled together, all leached through to the water, into the soil, into the lake beyond, and into the food chain for the entire area.
My God! It's like opening the curtains on Armageddon! It's worse! Much! Much!
Mildred turned to Ryan, her dark eyes wide in shock.
Now, fast! Down the hill and as far away as possible from this devil's brew!
She led the way back toward the lake, stumbling in her eagerness. Ryan was at her heels, the others following closely behind.
Well, what is it? What could be in those drums?
Lord alone knows. The killers were so many. Radioactive iodine, carbon-14.
Uranium?
Sure. Strontium-90, radium-226, tritium-radon-222. That's a gas.
Plutonium, Mildred?
Of course, Doc. Oh, I'm losing breath. Can't breathe. Deep in case. Carbon-14, cesium-134, and 137. Anything. It's all around us.
She wasn't that far from the jagged edge of panic, stumbling and nearly falling into the river at a point where the path Dogleg left.
Slow it, Mildred!
After all the self-control that Mildred had shown since they thought her, it was a shock to see the state she was in now. The discovery of the ruined rad storage site had freaked her out. She turned and gripped him by the arm, fingers tightening like a screw trap.
Ryan, that badge in your shirt doesn't show us how bad this might be. The REM count could be massive! Hopefully the worst of the leakage is gone, seeped away when the earth first cracked, but it is appalling.
Just take it careful. Break an ankle on this trail and it won't help.
This was the great fear of my generation, you know.
What?
Christy took Mildred by the hand to help her over a steep patch of tumbled stone.
Chernobyl!
Chernobyl what?
A place in Russia!
Upon my soul, ma'am, but I remember reading about that. And there were two more such accidents within a few years. Damnably similar. One was in Pennsylvania, was it? Or Manitoba. And one in Europe, near Lyon or Cardiff, I can't recall.
The beach opened before them. The expanse of the lake narrowed by the enclosing rocks of the headlands on either side. Mildred had recovered and climbed into the boat to sit on a thwart, hand pressed against her chest.
If ever I have a coronary, I'll have it now.
The others got in, and they pushed off, paddling quickly toward open water. Ryan noticed that the rad count had fallen back to red-orange, still high, but below lethal. As they rowed past the obscuring headland, they found themselves on top of two of the pursuing Viking dragon ships. Their escape had been discovered a little after dawn, and Joran Thoroldsen had immediately ordered out the longships. He sent two vessels, under the command of Egil Skallagsson, toward the west, while he led two more dragon ships in an easterly direction. He looked at them balefully once the small boat had been hauled alongside, and the six companions were on the deck.
I had thought we could trust you, Outlanders.
And you were right, Joran. But there's something important we have to tell you about.
No. Escape is treachery. The Carl of Markland will not talk with traitors.
You damned fool. You and your people, every man jack of them, faces a slow and painful death within a matter of weeks unless you move your steading.
Words, 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 like small pebbles rattling in a crab shell. I have said I will not talk, perhaps when we return to Markland. Before you all take the long road without turning, we might talk.
The flying eagle for the one-eyed outlander.
Jorund nodded.
For such treachery, perhaps. We shall see, Sigurd.
He gestured for the prisoners to be taken into the bow of his ship, where they were guarded by a couple of the younger warriors. There had been no attempt to search Ryan or any of the others, but their firearms had all been taken and placed in the stern. One of the guards was Eric Stonebiter.
What's Flying Eagle?
You would not wish to know.
Tell us.
It is a way of slaying only to be done by the Carl himself. Because you have betrayed his wishes, he may kill your leader in that way.
What fucking way?
Ryan, sitting on the gently heaving deck beside the teenager, was beginning to wish he'd stop asking about the Flying Eagle. The young Norseman blankly refused to face Jack and stared out across the lake, where the first tendrils of gray mist were already appearing.
It is a hard passing.
Jorund had also spotted the threatening bank of fog and was urging his rowers on to greater efforts. With Jack and the others still waiting, Eric Stonebiter eventually told them of the Flying Eagle.
If the Carl wills it, urged by the Wise Woman, then you may be bound crossways, wrists and ankles to a frame. The point of the knife will enter here.
He touched himself under the short ribs, low on the right side of his chest.
It is thrust in and drawn deep up to the top of the ribs' curve, then down again and out on the opposite side. The shape is like that of an eagle flying high against the sun.
J.B. had been particularly interested in the telling.
And that's it? Doesn't sound anything special to me.
No, that is but the half of it. Once the chest is laid open, the Carl steps in close and reaches within the cavity. He seizes the lungs in his fists and draws them slowly out. I have seen it. The lungs flutter and fill for many minutes.
Nice to see we've come so far in 100 years.
The fog closed in, thicker and more blinding than before. It surrounded the two dragon ships in a cocoon of muffling damp. Jorund ordered the two vessels to make fast to each other to prevent their becoming separated and lost. The oars were shipped, and they drifted in silence. Lookouts were posted at stem and stern. Water lapped against the wooden bows. The crew sat around, not talking, made uneasy by the shrouding mist. Christy huddled against Ryan for comfort and for warmth.
You figure we did right not to take them on in a firefight, lover?
Ryan shrugged.
In a moment like that, seeing them on top of us, you shoot or you don't. There's a good 40 men, most with blasters, hid behind the wooden sides of their ships. With the rifles, we could have done some serious chilling.
She smiled at him.
Sure. And so could they, huh? They had speed on the water, too. Rammed us. And that would have been the end of the book.
That's the way I figured it, too.
Ryan wiped beads of moisture from her cold cheeks.
I hoped the Baron might have listened about the Rad Lake.
It'll chill everyone in the Ville, won't it? Hot spot as red as that?
Sure. Maybe we can get him to listen to us back at the Ville. If the Flying Eagle don't get...
Doesn't.
Ryan grinned and shook his head.
Sure. If the Flying Eagle doesn't get us first.
A light offshore wind was blowing the two Norse longships farther out onto the lake. Jorund refused to allow the oars to be used to bring them back closer to the invisible land, worried that they might run upon saw-toothed rocks that would rip the belly out of the vessels. JB suggested to Ryan that they might risk a break for their boat, which was being towed behind the dragon ship.
Grab the blasters, cut the line, be gone, out of sight in a minute or less.
It was tempting.
We're not that desperate yet. Some of us would make it, sure. But not all of us.
JB nodded.
Guess so.
As the afternoon wore on, Mildred was working herself into a righteous rage.
That blonde hulk of total stupidity is sentencing every living thing in this village to certain slow, painful death, and the pig, ignorant son of a bitch won't listen.
Ryan touched her on the arm.
Sure. But if a man insists on putting the barrel of a Colt Magnum in his mouth and pulling the trigger, you'll likely get hurt if you try hard to stop him.
If we get to live long enough, we can try and get the word through someone like the young guy with the broken teeth.
I suppose so. I wish we could have had a good bath real soon to try to wash off some of the surface radiation we must have picked up from that Hell's Cauldron back there.
Will the lake water not be severely contaminated as well?
Doc's figure was looming from the mist. He'd been standing and leaning on the side, peering into the afternoon gloom.
I wouldn't want to drink much of it, but it's barely tepid compared to that boiling river.
Unbelievably, the fog was growing even thicker as the afternoon dragged by. When sitting on the cold wood of the bow, the friends could no longer see the ferocious head of the dragon with its blood-tipped teeth, only 10 feet away. Ryan could just make out the boots of the lookout who perched there. It had also become much colder. Somewhere out in the murk, a fish leaped, entering the water again with a slapping splash. Everyone on board jumped, startled. Christy stared out into the blank wall of fog, her eyes slightly closed, her head a little on one side. Ryan had been with her long enough to know something was happening. He strained his own eyes to see what was happening, but it was impossible.
What is it, Christy?
I can hear. Could be a big fish. Fog blurs the way I know things, but...
She stood up, like a questing hunter.
Gaia, Ryan, they're almost on top of...
The first of the Mutis boats rammed into them. The rocking, shifting deck and the clinging, choking fog made combat lethally surreal. Blasters were of little use when a target more than 10 feet away couldn't be seen. The wood quickly became slick with blood, and bodies jostled, screamed, and fell to the deck. Ryan held his 9mm six-hour pistol in his left hand, grabbed from the stern in that first moment of the attack, his Ponga in his right. He blasted and hacked at anything that came within range that wasn't either a friend or one of the Vikings. Despite being a captive of the Northmen, he had no doubt whatsoever that to be taken prisoner by the gibbering Muties would be far, far worse. Like so many battles that Ryan had lived through, this one was a series of desperate moments strung together in a journey.